Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
A new way to fight back against COVID, plus mandatory self-defense training for the not-so-friendly skies. I'm Contessa Brewer in for Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
America overwhelmed as cases spike, but now a new weapon in the fight against COVID.
The first pill that you can take at home.
Plus an encouraging new study about the severity of Omicron. Long lines building up at airports across the country.
Wearing your mask and getting vaccinated, you know, just being careful.
The Christmas travel forecast ahead and new training for flight attendants.
Give me your beer!
As the threat from unruly passengers grows.
We have every available asset in the police department working on this case.
A desperate search to find a missing child, where she was last seen, and why police say the three-year-old may be in grave and immediate danger. Cracking down on pandemic scams, the Secret Service says there's $100 billion in fraud. Now the White House pushing back. New tech trying to solve an old murder case. Record warmth predicted in 2022, plus the year ahead in movies and TV.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Even as Omicron cases are spiking around the nation, experts are trying to be reassuring. This is not March 2020. This time around, we have weapons in the war against COVID, notably the vaccine and some IV treatments. And tonight, we just got one more, an important one. And unlike the others, no needles needed. The FDA authorized Pfizer's antiviral pill to treat mild to moderate cases of COVID in people 12 and older. It's the first oral treatment for COVID. And even more encouraging news, although preliminary, a new study suggests Omicron doesn't make people that sick. It shows that people diagnosed with Omicron in South Africa between October 1st and November 30th were 80% less likely to be hospitalized compared to those diagnosed with another variant at the same time. Although researchers don't know if that outcome is due to protection from the vaccine or immunity from previous infections. The study has not yet been peer-reviewed, but scientists say it's promising. In the meantime, infection numbers are high in the United States. We're up to 161,000 cases a day. Some forecasts suggest we could see north of 400,000 infections a day. That's nearly double the previous record peak. And that worries Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I would point out that even if you have a diminution in severity, if you have a much larger number of individual cases, the fact that you have so many more cases might actually obviate the effect of it being less severe.
We're told the vaccine and the booster offers the very best protection from getting very sick. And now the Pfizer pill may also help keep people out of hospitals, which, of course, is what the hospitals need. CNBC's Meg Terrell is live on our top story tonight. Meg, I know you've been following this pill from day one. How effective is it? And really, at this point, how tight is the supply going to be?
Yeah, Contessa. So in a clinical trial, the drug called Paxlovid reduced hospitalizations and deaths from COVID by almost 90% when given within 5 days of symptoms. It was specifically tested in people who have risk factors for severe disease, like older age or health conditions. And that's who the FDA cleared the drug for, at least initially. So patients will take three pills twice a day for 5 days. And early on, supply will be limited, only enough for 265,000 people in January. Over Overall, the U.S. has purchased 10 million courses from Pfizer for about $5 billion. And supply will grow throughout the year. Pfizer now says globally it expects to supply 120 million treatment courses next year, up from 80 million it projected previously. Now, this drug does have some interactions with other medicines, though, so healthcare providers will have to work through those issues with patients. One option in those situations may be to use another antiviral pill from Merck, which is expected to be cleared by the FDA soon as well. Now, its results weren't quite as strong. It was a 30% reduction we saw there in the risk of hospitalization or death. But there will be more supply, 3 million treatment courses by the end of January. Now, that drug also has some safety concerns, so its use may be more limited. Meanwhile, some doctors are urging the FDA to consider authorizing a commonly used drug for depression and obsessive compulsive disorder called fluvoxamine for COVID, noting clinical trial results have shown a benefit along the same magnitude as Merck's drug, arguing that this drug is in plentiful supply and costs about a dollar a day. Merck's and Pfizer's more than $500 per course, Contessa.
Wow, that's quite a difference. Okay, so are these pills something that unvaccinated people who are opposed to getting the shot might actually be open to taking?
Yeah, so some will and some won't. According to a poll from Morning Consult last month, it found just more than half of unvaccinated adults said they would not take one of these pills if they got sick. But that leaves 47% who said they would. Contessa.
All right, Meg Terrell, thank you for that, Meg. The White House pushed back today on a Secret Service release this week about scammers stealing close to $100 billion from Americans during the pandemic. Today, Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the report used old data and just didn't paint an accurate picture.
There is no new research, data, or analysis of fraud here. What happened is there was just an adding up of two old IG reports.
Late today, the Secret Service softened the language in that release. CNBC's senior correspondent Eamon Javers now. So, Eamon, what's going on between the White House and the Secret Service?
Well, Contessa, it's not every day you see a dispute emerge between the White House and the Secret Service, but that's exactly what happened today. At issue here was that word stolen, and whether the better way to describe what happened is potential fraudulent activity, including fraud, but also things like overpayments or money sent to the wrong address. What is clear here is that a whole lot of money has gone to people the government says committed crimes. In one case, an Oregon dentist allegedly took nearly $8 million in small business loans, submitting three applications to the Restaurant Revitalization Fund for restaurants that were supposedly located in Sarasota, Miami, and Daytona Beach. In another case, a New Jersey man allegedly helped file more than 100 phony pandemic unemployment assistance claims, but in Massachusetts. That one resulted in more than $1.2 million in payouts. And two men in Michigan were part of a group that filed more than 500 false claims for unemployment benefits and were able to take more than $1.7 million in relief funds. Now, Roy Dotson is the new head of the Secret Service's pandemic fraud effort. He told me he's frustrated by that kind of theft at a time of national crisis.
As a taxpayer, it's shameful to think that individuals would take advantage of these programs that were established for people that were truly in need because of COVID-19, and that they would target them for their own personal, advantage.
Now, Contessa, this dispute over just how much has been stolen, quote unquote, comes at a time the White House is struggling to pass another enormous relief fund, Biden's nearly $2 trillion Build Back Better program. Now, the White House needs senators like Senator Joe Manchin, and he's reportedly worried about some of the money going to the wrong people, whether you call it stolen or just potentially fraudulent. Back over to you.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Eamon. Omicron doesn't seem to be slowing down holiday travel at airports. The TSA reports nearly 2 million air travelers across the U.S. yesterday. That is almost exactly the same number of flyers the same day in 2019 before the pandemic, and it's nearly double last year's traffic. The holiday travel surge comes as airlines grapple with a record-breaking number of unruly passengers this year. Miami-Dade police are now deploying a special team of officers to patrol the airport there. Look at this video. This is a brawl that broke out between police and travelers Monday. Well, today, House lawmakers called on airlines to make self-defense training mandatory for their flight crews. CNBC's Valerie Castro was able to experience one of those training sessions firsthand.
Flight attendants never know what sort of passenger they'll face. In this simulation, an armed hijacker trying to breach the cockpit.
I'm a hijacker!
But lately, an unruly passenger, in this case demanding alcohol, is not that far-fetched.
The changes on board with people having to wear masks has caused a lot of anxiety.
When these flight attendants come out of this training, they walk away a lot more confident about their ability to handle a variety of situations.
Crew member self-defense training has seen renewed interest as the number of incidents has soared over the past year.
I'm not by nature a violent person. I've never been in this situation before. What do I do when that moment freezes you?
The training covers a variety of self-defense moves.
I'm trying to put this palm to go through his chest and come out his back.
I took part in this session and learned firsthand you can punch, kick, stomp, and even gouge out the eyes of your attacker. For some of my classmates, the skills seem to come very naturally. After learning the moves, the participants are put to the test inside this flight simulator, unaware of what's just around the corner or down the aisle.
I was thinking that this was for real. You know, that those guys could try to hurt me.
Renee Elmore became a flight attendant in just the last 5 years. She often flies on smaller planes and sometimes is the only flight attendant on board. With this training, she now feels ready to face anyone at any time.
I just feel so much more empowered and more confident that I will be able to defend myself.
Some airlines stopped serving alcohol in hopes it would help the situation. Most have brought that service back, but American Airlines says there is no service in its main cabin until January. Southwest Airlines has no set date for bringing back the booze. Back to you.
Valerie Castro. Sarah Nelson joins me now, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, which represents about 50,000 flight attendants. Sarah, it's good to see you. I'm just curious your reaction. Do you think that the self-defense training should be mandatory?
Absolutely. We've been working on making this program mandatory since just after September 11th when it was created. And it needs to be provided in our regular training so that all flight attendants can receive it at their paid company training with oversight from the TSA. And there needs to be recurrent training as well, because as you saw in that video, you can be in a state of shock when you are presented with this, and you have to be able to respond in something that you're very trained to do with an immediate response. And that takes repetitive training. So this training is fantastic. I have been through it. It gives flight attendants confidence. It allows us to know how to stand. And it is specific to our workplace and this and the workplace that we work in to try to protect the cockpit, the other passengers, and ourselves.
When you look at this spike in Omicron variant across the nation, how much are you looking at this as a new stressor along with the crowded planes that we're seeing for the holiday season and thinking there's a reason to be concerned over the next couple weeks?
Well, it's really concerning because crew members are on the front lines and they are very likely to come in contact with Omicron, which also means that they may have to isolate and not be able to go to work. And that will put a stress and strain on staffing as well, which can also lead to operational disruptions. And that can also create high temperatures in the airport that lead to more disruptive passengers. So it all is very concerning to us, not only for our health, but also the conditions at work. And also, if this becomes just out of hand, that can have an economic impact on us as well.
And yesterday we heard that Delta's CEO asked the CDC to roll back some of those quarantine requirements for breakthrough cases because staffing is a problem. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that that is the wrong move, and it's the wrong message to send to the country at this time. The fact of the matter is that when flight attendants are testing negative and they feel better, they can get back to work. But what this may do is it may put flight attendants in a position of being forced to come back before they feel better. Mm. And that can raise tensions as well. Imagine someone coming back who's still coughing, who's still expressing symptoms, even if they're testing negative. So there's a real negative side to this, and we're not happy about Delta's move to ask for this, and we think it's the wrong way to go.
Sarah Nelson, we appreciate your time. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
The FBI joining a desperate search for a missing 3-year-old girl as police piece together dozens of surveillance videos for clues. New DNA tech that police hope could crack one of the country's most well-known cold cases. JonBenet Ramsey, 25 years later. And COVID concerns causing major problems for the world's largest tech trade show as some of the biggest companies in Silicon Valley decide not to go in person.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
FBI agents joined the desperate search for a missing 3-year-old girl who vanished from a playground in San Antonio, Texas. Police say Lena Keel has been missing since Monday and could be in grave, immediate danger. Lena and her family are Afghan refugees who escaped from the war-torn country and resettled in the United States. Here's CNBC's Perry Russum.
The search for Lena Keel now in day three. San Antonio police say the 3-year-old was wearing a red dress, black jacket, and black shoes. Her hair was in a ponytail.
We have every available asset in the police department working on this case right now.
She was last seen at a playground in a gated apartment complex. Police say she was with her mother, and then her mother walked away.
When she came back relatively short time later, the little girl was gone.
Right now, police say this is a missing person case. There were other people at the playground with children at the time. Investigators are still trying to track down all of them. Every apartment in the complex has been searched, all 300 units. Police are stopping anyone who comes and goes.
We've asked for assistance from the FBI. They have sent us a number of agents to help us in the search.
Lena is 4 feet tall, weighs just 55 pounds. Her father tells Ken's Five the family moved to the U.S. from Afghanistan in 2019, and they have not eaten or slept since Lena disappeared.
Their state is what you might expect of a parent whose child is missing and has been missing for some time.
The police chief says the canines had a scent at one point and then lost it. He says the longer this goes, the less hopeful he is. Contessa.
Perry, this is so sad. Thank you. Sunday marks 25 years since the murder of 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey. The death of the tiny beauty queen and the whodunit mystery led to documentaries and made-for-TV movies. Now new technology might have the answer. The same technology recently used to identify a serial killer in California. Here's NBC's Miguel Almaguer.
New focus on the JonBenet Ramsey case, one of America's most notorious unsolved murders, as officials now turn to advanced DNA.
We have a kidnapping. Hurry, please.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There's a note left and our daughter's gone.
The 6-year-old beauty contest winner taken overnight from her bed just after Christmas in 1996. This bizarre ransom note, "We have your daughter," found inside the family home in Boulder, Colorado. JonBenet's body found hours later, wrapped in a blanket in their basement.
It's all I could do was just scream.
Suspicion from the police and the media fell on her parents, John and Patsy Ramsey, and on her older brother, Burke.
I did not have anything to do with it. I love that child with my whole of my heart and soul.
In 2008, 2 years after Patsy Ramsey died of cancer, armed with evolving DNA technology, investigators concluded an unknown male outside the family was responsible. The Boulder County District Attorney apologizing, saying the suspicions about the Ramseys in this case created an ongoing living hell for the Ramsey family. Investigators have analyzed nearly 1,000 DNA samples, but no arrests have ever been made. Now detectives are hoping genetic DNA testing, which led to the capture of the Golden State Killer in 2018, may finally bring closure to the family and friends of JonBenet. Her father, John Ramsey, telling NBC News, "We know there are a number of items found at the scene that have never been tested for DNA evidence. Time will tell if they're really spending time and resources to find the killer of our daughter. A quarter century of dead-end leads and the memory of a little girl taken from her family on Christmas."
With this new DNA technology, investigators have not yet given a timeline for when they expect a new update on this case. Contessa?
Miguel, thank you. COVID and the fallout from the pandemic dealt a major blow to life expectancy in America, according to a new report from the CDC. In 2020, average life expectancy dropped by nearly 2 years. That's the biggest annual decline since World War II. And for communities of color, that impact was even worse. The death rate increased by 37.5% for Hispanic Americans and 26.5% for Black Americans. That's 14 points higher than white Americans. The CDC did not analyze the trends for Asian Americans or Native Americans, but there was one bright spot in this report. The death rate for infants dropped by nearly 3% from 2019. That decline kept the U.S. life expectancy from falling even further, according to the CDC. Support is building for a Colorado truck driver sentenced to more than 100 years in prison. Today, his family rallied at the state capitol, and the DA made a formal request to overturn the sentence. Cows and climate change. Scientists issuing a warning for the planet for 2022. So how can a cattle diet make an impact?
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
2022 will be one of the hottest years ever. That's according to a preliminary forecast from the United Kingdom's Meteorological Office. Scientists predict average global temperatures next year will be about 1.96 degrees. I probably would have rounded up to two, but whatever. That's Fahrenheit, and it's above pre-industrial levels. That would tie for the seventh hottest year on record. Scientists also note that every year since 2015 has ranked in the top 10 warmest years on record. The forecast is calculated on what they call key drivers of global climate, but it does not include unanticipated events like a big volcanic eruption, which the agency says could temporarily cool global temperatures. One of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gases? Livestock. Cows pass gas. Lots of methane gas, and scientists say it plays a role in warming the planet. So researchers in New England are trying out a new diet plan to give cows a little relief. It just may end up helping humans, too. Here's CNBC's Diana Woolick.
On a research farm at the University of New Hampshire, Scientists are feeding cows seaweed in an attempt to reduce the amount of methane they produce.
How much methane actually comes from cows?
About 25% of methane are produced directly from fermentation by the cows.
Okay, so that's burping and farting together?
Both. But okay. About 95% is burping.
All that gas is contributing to global heating.
Despite their best efforts to try to find ways to reduce that sort of carbon hoofprint, there's lots more that can be improved in terms of changing cows' diet. We think that seaweed can be part of that solution.
There are 250 species of seaweed in the Gulf of Maine, and many also grow on the West Coast as well as in Europe.
So it's a giant repository for us to look for other potential solutions.
After receiving a $5 million charitable grant over the summer for the first study, Bigelow Labs was just granted $10 million from the USDA for further research into seaweed feed.
While the purpose of the study was to reduce methane emissions, they had to be very careful that the seaweed didn't affect milk production, because that's what makes these cows valuable to the market.
Farmers get paid based on milk butter fat and milk protein, so our goal is to reduce methane, but at the same time not reducing those milk components.
Researchers say they think the seaweed may actually improve that performance, because reducing all that burping and farting allows the cows to use that energy instead for milk and beef production.
We think this is a great market opportunity for dairy production that's also a major commodity for the state.
Not to mention a breath of fresh air for the planet. For the news, I'm Diana Olick in Durham, New Hampshire.
So innovative. The Astroworld Music Festival. 10 people died, multiple lawsuits filed, and now a congressional committee is stepping in to launch an investigation of its own. A turnaround for New York City real estate. After a big drop in sales, a record amount of money now coming in. We go inside the high-end buildings, turning things around. A holiday gift for millions of Americans. President Biden extending a payment pause for federal student loan borrowers. The pressure he was facing to make that call. And a second sitting member of Congress asked for information related to the January 6th attack on the Capitol. You know what they say, the show must go on, but with fewer people. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. The world's largest tech trade conference, the Consumer Electronics Show, will go on, but a lot of America's tech giants won't be there in person. Facebook parent Meta, Amazon, Twitter, and Pinterest are some of the companies changing plans in light of the Omicron surge. Organizers say the January show in Las Vegas will have enhanced precautions, including vaccination requirements, masking, and COVID testing. Well, before you grab a bag of salad mix for Christmas dinner, a new warning from the FDA about listeria contamination in several Fresh Express products. That company pulled some of its packaged salads and leafy greens off shelves. A full list of the products can be found on the FDA's website. Kentucky, home to some of the best bourbon in the world, and now connoisseurs are paying big bucks in an auction to benefit tornado survivors. Organizers say they reached their goal of raising $1 million within 48 hours. Single bottles going for hundreds to hundreds of thousands of dollars, including this incredibly rare 19-year-old bottle of Willet, sold for more than 400 grand. Speaking of money, on Wall Street, the Dow up 261 points, the S&P up 47, and the NASDAQ up 181. I'm Contessa Brewer, in tonight for Shepard Smith. It's half past the hour. Here's what's making the news.
A bipartisan investigation launched into last month's deadly concert tragedy. Who's at the center of a new congressional probe? Regulators looking into Tesla. What's installed inside more than 500,000 vehicles? It has the automaker facing safety questions. But first, new action by the White House on student loan debt.
The Federal Reserve estimates that as of third quarter of this year, Americans owe more than $1.7 trillion in student loans. Well, now they'll have more time before some have to start paying some of it back. The moratorium on federal student debt payments was supposed to end January 31st, but with Omicron surging, the president announced an extension today, saying millions of people are still coping with the pandemic and need more time. He announced the deadline's extended until May 1st. NBC senior national political reporter Sahil Kapoor now. Sahil, good to see you. The president was under a lot of pressure to make this decision. Tell me about it.
No doubt he was, Contessa, and not just from rank-and-file progressive lawmakers like Senator Elizabeth Warren and Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, but also from Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Majority Leader of the United States Senate. They and other student advocates had been pressuring President Biden and the administration to do more, to use their executive authority to cancel up to $50,000 in student debt. The White House's position is that it will sign a bill if Congress sends it to them to cancel only $10,000 in student debt. It wouldn't go further, but it looks like the 1-2 punch of the Omicron variant and that pressure that they're getting has pushed the Biden administration to extend by 90 days this moratorium on federally backed student loans. Note that private student loan borrowers will not get relief from this. They will still have to make payments in accordance with their lenders.
Well, for those borrowers affected, I'm sure that that comes with some big relief. So we also are hearing, Sahil, some big news on Capitol Hill today that the January 6th committee is asking to interview Republican Congressman Jim Jordan. What are they after? Is there a chance that he's going to cooperate?
The committee is alleging that Jim Jordan had communications with then-President Donald Trump on the day of January 6th and was also communicating with the White House between the 2020 election and the January 6th attack in what they say was an attempt to overturn the result of the 2020 election. They are asking Jim Jordan to provide documents of those communications, evidence of the messages he traded back and forth with the White House that are relevant to January 6th, and they're asking him to appear for a deposition. Now, just moments ago, Jim Jordan appeared for an interview saying he would review that letter. He didn't say he would cooperate, but he didn't necessarily rule it out either, Contessa.
All right.
And the big picture of this, it's very significant to know, this is the second member of Congress that the January 6th Select Committee is investigating in connection with allegations that these members of Congress participated in efforts to overthrow the result of the 2020 election. These are uncharted waters.
Well, that's an understatement. Sahil, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. Calls growing louder in support of a convicted truck driver in Colorado. Today, the family of Rahel Aguilera Medeiros held a rally at the state capitol in Denver, calling for him to have his 110-year sentence reduced or be freed altogether. Aguilera Medeiros was sentenced last week. He was convicted on 27 counts, including vehicular homicide, for his role in this crash. In 2019, he was behind the wheel of a semi when it crashed into traffic on Interstate 70. Four people were killed. The trucker says it was an accident, that his brakes failed. You can see him there sobbing in court. But prosecutors argued he'd made several mistakes. He could have avoided the crash, they said. His sentence is more than 100 years because Colorado law requires those sentences to run one after another and not concurrently. And that has struck a nerve. More than 4.7 million people have signed a petition asking the governor to grant him clemency. The formal application is being filed. The governor has said he will consider it. The district attorney who pursued the case in the first place has also filed a motion to reconsider the length of the sentence. One of the victim's relatives said she doesn't want to see his sentence commuted, but thinks the law that led to the sentence does need to be reevaluated. U.S. lawmakers launched their own investigation of the Astroworld Music Festival tragedy. The House Oversight Committee says its bipartisan investigation will focus on Live Nation's role in planning, staffing, and safety for that event in Houston last month. Live Nation was the concert promoter for the festival. A crowd surge killed and fatally injured 10 concert goers and hurt hundreds more during Travis Scott's performance. The House committee is asking Live Nation to provide information about security planning. They also want a company representative to appear for a briefing next month. In a statement, Live Nation vowed to share information with the committee and once again offered sympathies to the families of the victims. The U.S. government launched an investigation into more than 500,000 Tesla cars over a feature called Passenger Plays. It allows passengers to play video games on Tesla's touchscreen while the car is moving. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration notes that feature may distract the driver and increase the risk of a crash. The investigation covers Teslas of different types and model years dating back to 2017. Tesla did not immediately comment. According to the CDC, every year, about 3,000 people die in crashes involving a distracted driver. For context, that's about 8 deaths a day. A year ago, New York City's real estate market was in free fall. Prices were down, sales had dried up, more than 10,000 unsold apartments just waiting for a buyer. But now, the bounce back is a bonanza. So far this year, $19.5 billion in luxury contracts signed. That's a new record. The old one, $14 billion in 2014. That's from real estate appraisal firm Miller Samuel. To take you inside the high-end apartments being bought up, here's CNBC's Robert Frank.
In New York City, the largest penthouses, the most palatial townhouses, the designer duplexes have all had their strongest year ever. Sales of properties priced at $10 million or more have already hit an all-time record. Over 220 penthouses sold or gone into contract, and shiny new luxury towers are selling out, including this mega home in Midtown Manhattan at 111 West 57th Street. Asking price, $21.5 million.
So we're on Billionaire's Row, as some like to call it. Three bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms with 12.5 foot ceilings and big windows.
Real estate brokers and brothers, Tal and Oren Alexander, did more than $1 billion in sales this year alone in New York City.
It's been a record-breaking year across the board, not just for us, for the market.
The luxury market had been the worst segment before the pandemic. Now it's leading the recovery. Soaring stocks, crypto, and other assets have created record wealth for buyers.
It really is remarkable to see the amount of wealth that's being created.
Softer prices allowed many to buy their ultimate Manhattan dream. Brokers say the buyers are almost all from the U.S., with few foreigners. Most are buying in New York for their second or third home. The most expensive deal of the year was the apartment bought by Joe Tsai of Alibaba for $157 million. And the problem now is a penthouse shortage and not enough big apartments for sale to meet all this new demand. Contessa?
Robert, thank you. Spider-Man on pace to be the first and only billion-dollar movie of 2021. The web slinger bringing a little relief to the box office. So what's on deck for the entertainment industry in 2022? CNBC's Julia Boorstin takes a look into the future next. And in need of a last-minute gift idea? Well, it looks like secondhand stores have plenty. The resale industry is booming. And one group in particular leading the charge. Our Year Ahead series continues tonight. And for the rest of 2021, we're peering around the corner to 2022 and what the future holds for space, crypto, and more. Tonight in the Year Ahead in entertainment, this past year, we've seen studios move their movies to streaming services. We also saw theaters reopen across the country after getting crushed by COVID. But there's a ray of hope for the silver screen. Major blockbusters like Spider-Man give life to the box office. So what can we look forward to in 2022? Here's CNBC's Julia Boorstin.
Warner Brothers' highly anticipated Matrix Resurrections is being simultaneously released today in theaters and on HBO Max.
I remember this.
A sign of just how much the movie industry has changed. Studios have embraced newfound flexibility during the pandemic, which broke them free of the set window between films' theatrical and at-home releases. Now, with the number of big franchise films coming next year, including The Batman, Jurassic World Dominion, Black Panther 2, and Top Gun Maverick, studios are hoping to maximize ticket sales by maintaining exclusive theatrical windows, while embracing digital streaming releases when necessary to drive total revenue. It's still unclear how much movie-going will come back, although Spider-Man No Way Home's massive opening showed younger generations are eager to see superhero blockbusters in theaters.
Hello, Peter.
That film netting the second largest domestic opening ever. Comscore projects the 2021 North American box office will total $4 billion, up from $2.3 billion in 2020, but down from nearly $11.5 billion in 2019.
It used to be when you scheduled a film, it was rock solid on that date. Not that way anymore. Things move, and the COVID-19 impact will continue.
One key issue, how much people feel the opportunity to watch movies and series at home raises the bar for going out to the movies. Kantar estimates the average subscriber now has over 4 streaming services. But the streaming wars are going to get a lot more competitive. Deloitte predicts that more than 150 million Americans will cancel a paid streaming subscription in 2022. The question is which services give consumers the most value. Netflix, Disney Plus, and Amazon Prime Video are the most popular.
The most important thing for them to do now is to diversify the range of types of content that they're offering. And we're starting to see that already. We see some streamers starting to offer games or music, podcasts, or other types of entertainment. And I think that's how you're going to start to retain the consumers.
Another streaming wild card to watch, what happens when two media giants merge, Discovery and Warner Media, and whether they bundle together their services, HBO Max and Discovery Plus.
One thing's for sure, the streamers, including Netflix and Disney, are investing more every year in content, giving consumers more options than ever, particularly at home. Contessa?
Julia, thank you for that. Puck News' Matt Bellany joins me now, former editor of The Hollywood Reporter. It's good to see you tonight. You know, I'm hearing these mixed messages about theaters. On the one hand, you have Spider-Man with this huge opening, and then on the other hand, the numbers are still down from before the pandemic. So where do we go from here?
Not just down, but way down. I mean, consider that in 2019, $42.5 billion was the global box office. And this year, it's going to be a fraction of that. I think the danger here is to look at Spider-Man and say, oh, the movie theaters are back. They're not back. This is still a very difficult market. And for the right type of property, and Marvel has shown itself to be the right type of property, you can get audiences to return. That's great news. But for everything else, it's still really up in the air.
All right. So if we are taking movies out of it, I mean, you know, whether they're going to be put on HBO Max and in theaters at the same time or not, you know, we're still going to watch the movies. What about television? Where are we going with cable and how much is that going to continue its transformation?
Well, I think we're going to see an acceleration of trends we're already seeing, which is the transition from the linear cable bundle to the streaming service economy. More and more investment is being made in streaming services like Disney Plus, HBO Max, to compete with Netflix and try to get to that 100 million, 150 million, even $200 million number, or 200 million subscriber number that everybody is chasing. You're going to see more competition, and more of these smaller players are going to be under pressure to merge or even go out of business. Things like Paramount Plus, Peacock, some of the smaller services are really going to be under pressure to either invest or go away or merge.
Do you think that the model is going to change too? I mean, right now, if you could sign up for something, binge watch something over a month or 8 weeks or something like that, and then say, forget it, that's it. I mean, is that really a sustainable model for these streaming services?
It makes it a lot harder to make money because, as we all know, the difficulty of canceling a cable bundle is pretty significant. And that was a secret weapon for the cable companies. Now you can make a few clicks and cancel your service. And we're seeing evidence in surveys that have been coming out lately that the binge model is not ideal for keeping subscribers. People like it, but the HBO Max model, where they release one every week or a few up front and then one every week, that is proving, according to this data, a little more impressive at keeping subscribers in that service. I think we're going to see more of that.
Matt, it's great to see you and also the lovely lady who made a quick cameo in your doorway behind you. Thank you. Happy holidays.
I will tell her.
Bargain hunting, wheeling and dealing, you know, one man's trash, another man's treasure. I say woman's. Whatever you call it, more people are browsing their local thrift stores for the next best thing. ThredUp is an online store where you buy and sell secondhand clothes. According to the CEO, 33 million people bought their first used item in 2020 during the pandemic. Of that number, 76% say they're going back for more. But there's one group in particular buying into the trend. Here's CNBC's Courtney Reagan.
Mary Stanfield can't afford to shop at the mall. She just prefers not to. My favorite part is like digging through like the rows of t-shirts and finding something cool.
She's a part of a growing cohort of consumers who are swayed to spend on secondhand.
I got this from Salvation Army. And so I wore this actually on the first day of school with these green shorts.
According to a report commissioned by resale website ThredUp, the secondhand market is expected to more than double to $77 billion over the next 5 years, growing 11 times faster than traditional retail. Much of the growth is expected to come from Gen Z and millennial consumers. Over 40% of them have already shopped secondhand for clothing, shoes, and accessories over the past year. Over half of teens already buy secondhand clothing.
Young people today, they still want a great deal, but they want to do it guilt-free. And I think the power of thrift, the power of resale, is being able to deliver across those three pieces. Great brands, great prices, in a sustainable way.
It's good for the environment and everything. And it's just fun for me to come in here and like spend time looking at stuff.
They're affordable, and like I'm a student in the New York City, so you can find a lot of cool stuff.
I'll go shopping with my mom, and it'll feel more like a chore, whereas thrifting, it's more, you know, creative and expressive.
Secondhand shoppers have more choices than ever before. The traditional thrift store treasure hunt may still be the preferred method for many, but millions are turning to online resale platforms like eBay, Poshmark, Depop, The RealReal, and ThredUp. But the rise of the online resale market isn't putting a damper on secondhand shopping at stores like Beacon's Closet in New York City, even with the pandemic-fueled capacity limits.
People still want to shop. They'll wait like an hour, 45 minutes in line just to shop in here, which is crazy, but it's like an everyday thing.
Nearly a quarter of 13 to 24-year-olds say they'll buy from secondhand websites in 2022. The same amount also plan to sell their items through an online store or through social channels, according to Instagram's inaugural trend report. Back to you.
In 1887, a time capsule was buried in Richmond, Virginia. It was found last week by crews taking apart a pedestal that once held a statue of Robert E. Lee. Well, today it was cracked open, and after 134 years, we got a look inside. Social media. According to a new poll, most Americans don't trust it. But which company are they most suspicious about, and how many still log on? Many small businesses have struggled to stay open during the pandemic, but one has not only stayed open, it's expanded with 226 new locations around the country, all stocking its one and only product, cookies. So what's their recipe for success? Here's CNBC's Andrea Day.
Yes, sir. So we're going to eat these cookies.
Look at this cream.
Cookie reviews.
It has the blueberries.
Are exploding on social media.
This is 10 out of 10. One of the best cookies I've tried.
So good.
Millions of views.
It's actually really good.
And dedicated TikTok fans.
My God, I'm obsessed.
All right, besties, let's try it.
The guys behind the cookies, Jason McGowan and Sawyer Hemsley.
I have to pinch myself every day because we talk about sprinkles over the conference table and pink frosting.
They started Crumble 4 years ago when Hemsley was in college.
We didn't know how to bake anything when we got started, right?
We learned, we watched YouTube, we read books, and we networked. It was more of a side hustle.
Early into that hustle, they posted a video on social media.
It was crazy. Like, our first TikTok video that got over a million views, we're just like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Is this real?
Our store started getting just swamped.
Similar to how fashion designers release or drop new looks, they started dropping new cookie flavors.
Let's choose four unique flavors every week and rotate them out and launch it and post it on social media every Sunday night.
And it worked.
It goes so wild that social media sometimes think that there's an error and things get turned off for a minute. If we're 1 minute late, it's like, did the world die? What's happening? Why is the video not up here?
They scheduled their Sunday evening around 6 p.m.
Like these 19-year-old twin sisters.
My last Crumble review from last week got
1.7 million views.
A peanut butter brownie.
Here's the middle. Look at that layer of peanut butter.
See, I feel like what gets people so excited about it is that, like, the flavors are kept a secret for, like, the next week, and so nobody knows what they are. And then when they come out, there's so much hype around it, and everybody wants to go try them.
We call it the great TikTok boom of 2021.
They don't pay for the reviews, but they are paying attention.
And we actually listen to their feedback.
We do.
Would you ever expand beyond cookies?
I think that's a great question. We like simplicity. If you walk into our stores, a lot of people say, this is the Apple of cookies, the Apple store of cookies.
And talk about the Apple store of cookies. Hemsley says they get about 250 applicants a week, or 50 every day. And all of these people wanting to open Crumble Bakeries. Now, in case you're wondering, the fan favorite flavor, anything with Oreos. Back to you.
Mouth-watering, Andrea Day. Okay, a majority of Americans are actually on social media like TikTok, but ironically, they don't really trust these platforms with their data. They want the government to do something about it. That's according to a Washington Post Char School poll, which asked internet users about big tech. The company Americans trust least? Facebook. 72% of respondents say they don't trust Facebook much or at all when it comes to their personal information and internet activity. The distrust extends to Instagram, TikTok, WhatsApp, and YouTube, though not as much as for Facebook. 64% of Americans say the government needs to look into regulation for how internet companies handle users' data. That's a change from 2012, when a Pew Research study found the majority of Americans did not support this. A 134-year-old time capsule finally opened today. It was found at the site of a former statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee in Richmond, Virginia. Getting it open wasn't easy. Conservationists spent about 5 hours trying to pry that lid off, at times just coaxing the time capsule.
Time capsule, now's not the time to be shy.
Governor Ralph Northam arrived to help unveil the time capsule about noon, left, came back because it was taking so long. And inside, an almanac from 1875, a cloth envelope, a coin, items that appeared to be water damaged. Crews found the capsule last week, removing the pedestal that formerly held a statue of Robert E. Lee. The governor's office says it believes members of the community donated items in 1887, most of these objects likely related to the Confederacy. 45 seconds left on the race to the finish. The FDA has authorized Pfizer's antiviral pill to treat mild to moderate COVID cases in people 12 and older. It's the first COVID treatment in pill form to get the green light. President Biden has extended the pause on student loan payments until May 1st. No verdict in the manslaughter trial of ex-cop Kim Carter after a third day of jury deliberations. They'll resume tomorrow. Jurors in the Elizabeth Holmes fraud trial will also continue deliberating tomorrow. They had off today. And now you know the news. This is Wednesday, December 26, 2021. And I'm Contessa Brewer, in for Shepard Smith. Follow us on social media.
You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.